Last week, we studied one part of thought processes. Thought processes belonging to the five sense doors, or that arise through five sense doors. Today we will study the second part of thought processes, that is, thought processes arising through mind door. Now you already know that there are six sense doors in Abhidhamma, the five ordinary senses and the mind. So the mind is called the sixth sense door in Abhidhamma. When we see something, there is seeing consciousness arising in our minds, and that seeing consciousness, or the seeing consciousness thought process, arises in our mind through eye door. Now when we think of something, or when we think of something in the past or in the future, or when we concentrate on our thoughts, on our emotions, then the thought process that arises in our mind is through mind door, not through seeing or hearing, but through our mind. And as I said, maybe the last a week before last, the mind door means the bhavanga, the inactive thought moments. So the five sense door thought processes and mind door thought processes arise one after the other, sometimes one following the other. Last week we studied about what is it is to be seeing, and we first see with the eye-door thought process, and then we need four more thought processes which arise through mind-door or mind-door thought processes to be able to say, I see a man, I see a woman, and so on. So there are many kinds of mind-door thought processes, and today we are going to study not all of them, but most of them. I left out some kinds of thought processes because they need special, I mean, more familiarity with the details of Abhidhamma. So the first one is mind or thought process belonging to sense sphere. You know sense sphere, karma, vajra. The chedas belonging to sense sphere, there are 54. So, in this type of thought process, the chedas that arise all belong to, or all are one or more of the 54 chedas belonging to sense sphere. So this type of consciousness, I mean, thought process arises when the object is experienced through mind door only and not through the five senses. Because it is said in our books that when an object strikes at your eye, the visible object, it also strikes at your mind. So both eye door and mind door. That is why there is the vibration of bhavanga or life continuum. Now here, without striking at the one of the five senses, it strikes at the only at the mind or at the bhavanga consciousness. And most thought processes during vipassana meditation are of this kind. So when you practice meditation, whether you keep your mind on the breath or on your thoughts or emotions, the thought processes are mostly of the mind or thought process type. Because when you concentrate on the breath, you do not look at the breath with your eyes, but you try to see them in your mind's eye. So these thought processes always come through the mind door. And when you concentrate on your thoughts, through mind door, and on your emotions like anger, or attachment, then they all arise through mind door. And for our convenience, we will study only two kinds of this mind door thought process belonging to sense sphere. So please look at the second page, chart on second page, the diagrams of thought processes. So the first one is when we experience present material properties, we see with our mind present material properties. I mean, we experience with our mind present material properties, like when we concentrate on the breath. We experience the breath through mind door. So, since the object is here present, we need one past bhavanga. A means past bhavanga. I think you remember. If you don't remember, you have to go back to the sheets given before. And then two moments of vibrating. One is vibrating C, and the other arrested bhavanga, or the end of the bhavanga, U. Now, after U, what do you see? M. M is Pali Mano Dwara Vajana, that is mind door adverting. Can you point to the mind door adverting on the chart? Mind door adverting. Fourth column, second dot, right? Fourth column has three dots. The first is five sense door adverting, the second is mind door adverting. So here we have that one, mind door adverting. That means from this moment on, the inactive mind will be turned into active mind or active thought moments. It will be turned towards the present object. And after that, since it is not seen or heard, we do not need accepting, receiving, investigating, determining. So they are not included here. So immediately after M, mind or adverting, there are seven moments of javana. And then two moments of registering follows, two T's. And after that, it leads to bhavanga again. Registering thoughts. In Pali, we call it tadaramana. Because they are not through five senses. The object is presented through or experienced through mind door and not through eye door and so on. So they are not needed here. So the first one is for the material objects that are present. The second one is for the objects, material objects that are past or future, and also for the for chetas and chetasikas, whether they are present or past or future. So again, the second is for material properties belonging to past and future, and chetas and chetasikas belonging to past, present and future. In that case, we do not need a past bhavanga, because it is not a present object now. It is a past object. Or even if it is a present object, it is not material property. It is cheta or cetasika. So we do not need the past bhavanga here. So less past bhavanga, we have two vibrating moments, or one vibrating moment and one arrested moment. And then the same M, mind door adverting, and then seven javanas and two registering moments, and then bhavanga. So most of the time, say, when we think of something, when we meditate, when we speculate something, the one of these two types of thought processes are arising in our minds. So this is the sense. This belongs to sense sphere because the M is represented by Manodvara Vajana, and J Javanas are represented by Akusala, unwholesome Chetas, and the 8 sense sphere wholesome, and 8 sense sphere functional or Kiriya. So all these Chetas in this the thought process belong to, or they are among the 54 types of consciousness. the next kind of mind or thought process is jhana thought process. Now you all of you are familiar with jhana. Now in order to attain jhana, then you have to practice samatha meditation. There are 40 subjects of samatha meditation mentioned in the 9th chapter of the manual or in the Visuddhimagga. You may go to any book you like. And this book is easier than the manual. So among the 40 subjects of samatha meditation, 30 subjects lead to attainment of jhana, but 10 do not lead to attainment of jhana. So out of 40 subjects, you can choose, or you can, what to call, you can divide 30 and 10. And out of 30, you can take any one of the subjects and practice tranquility meditation or samatha meditation. And let us say you practice earth kasina meditation. So you look at the earth disk, and then you try to memorize it and take it in your mind, and you will reach a stage where you can conceptualize this image. That means that image becomes a very, very fine, very pure, even devoid of blemishes on the real kasina disk. So then a time will come when jhana is going to arise in your mind. And when jhana is going to arise in your mind, or when jhana arises in your mind, there is one thought process in your mind. And then that thought process is called jhana thought process. And this belongs to mind or thought process, because the disk, which is the object of this meditation or this jhana, is not the physical disk, but the image you have grasped in your mind. So that is concept, panyati. And the meditation as well as the jhana takes that concept as object. And there are two kinds of jhana, jhana thought processes. One is at the first attainment, and the other is a later sustained attainment. So the first attainment is, look at the second page. What do we have? We have no pasbawanga, right? No pasbawanga, because it is through mind door. When the objects are through mind door and they are not present, visible, or present five objects, then we do not need the pasbawanga. So there is no pasbawanga. Then vibrating moment, and then arrested moment. And here also mind door adverting. After mind door adverting, there come 4 moments of sense sphere kusala or kriya. These 4 moments, they are abbreviations like here, PR and so on. They are given on the next page. So the first of these moments is called preparation, and the second is called approximation, and the third is called adaptation, and the fourth is called sublimation or change of lineage. The abbreviations are of Pali, so one of each movement is has a separate name. So PR is preparation movement, and UP is approximation movement, AN is adaptation movement, and G is the change of lineage movement. These four movements are represented by one of the 8 sansvya kusala or sansvya kriya. Because after becoming an arahant without jhana, he may want to attain jhana, then he will practice samatha meditation. So it can be either kusala or kriya. Now after these four moments comes jhana moment, only one jhana moment, and then it leaves us to bhavanga again. Now if it is the first jhana, then the jhana is represented by first jhana kusala wholesome, or first jhana kriya. If it is second jhana, then it is represented by second jhana, and so on. Now, jhana movement arises only once at this time, and then lapses into bhavanga again. Now, the object of this thought process is in this case, the conceptualized sign or the image, mental image of the disc, not the disc itself, but the mental image, and that mental image is called in Pali Panyati concept. So the object of M and so on is the mental image of the disc here. Now G is in Pali it is called Gotrabhu, change of lineage. Now change of lineage here means change of the lineage of sense sphere to a lineage of form sphere. So until say until G is kama vajra consciousness, right? One of the 8 kusalas or kriyas. But JH, jhana, belongs to rupa vajra or arupa vajra, form or formless sphere. So change of lineage begins with or after the G, Gotrabhu. That is why it is called Gotrabhu. Gotra means lineage, and bhu means change or overpowering or something like that. After getting the jhana, after first attainment of jhana, a person will want to get into it again. A person will want to have the jhana moments arise in him consecutively, say for 1 hour, 2 hours, or maybe one day or 2 days. So in that case, he has to practice samatha meditation again, taking the conceptualized sign as his object. And then in this case, after the mind door adverting, no kama vachara moments, but direct to jhana moments, because he has first attained the jhana through kama vachara moments, and now he doesn't need these kama vachara moments. So immediately after mind door adverting, jhana moments arise. And how many jhana moments, we do not know. It may be only 2 moments or 3 moments. So before entering into this attainment, a person has to make a wish. something like, may I be in this jhana for 1 hour, or may I be in this jhana for 2 hours. And up at the end of the intended time, then he will emerge from jhana. That means Bhavanga will arise then. So the dots represent many, many, many moments of jhanas, maybe millions. So with regard to jhana, there are two varieties. One is at the first attainment of jhana, and the other is later sustained attainment. So if you get first jhana, then you can get into first jhana again as a sustained attainment. If you get second jhana, then you can enter into second jhana and so on. Then the next is what? Of path. Now, this thought process, path thought process, is the thought process at the moment of enlightenment. So, in studying that the path thought process, we will also study what enlightenment is, because people are talking about enlightenment. See, there was one person who even said, "I am one of the 8 enlightened persons in the world." Somebody said that. I don't know what he meant by enlightenment. He was on TV. but the host did not know how to ask him. So, at least according to teachings of Theravada, what enlightenment is, we will understand later. So, now, in order to reach the path, one has to practice vipassana meditation. We cannot avoid the practice of vipassana meditation if we want to get enlightenment. So, suppose a person practices vipassana meditation and he progresses from one stage of vipassana knowledge to another, and so on and so on. And so, when his concentration and wisdom mature, and when he is about to get enlightenment, then a thought process arises in him. So that thought process, and you know, there are four stages of enlightenment: first, second, third, fourth, or stream entrant, once returner, non-returner, and arahant. So let us say this is first stage. So when a person reaches the first stage of enlightenment, this thought process arises in him. Here also there is no past bhavanga. So two moments of vibration, vibrating bhavanga, and then M, again, mind or adverting. There must always be mind or adverting in mind or thought processes. Now, after that, similarly, there are four movements of kama vajra, sense fear. Here, sense fear, kusala, wholesome, not kriya, because here it is a worldling putrajana, not an arahant. If he is an arahant, he will not reach the first stage. He has already reached the first stage. So here, only kusala will do. So four moments, the same, they are given the same name. But here, lineage means from the worldling lineage to, in Pali, Arya lineage, or noble lineage. So from after the moment of G, Gotrabhu, he becomes a noble person in Arya Pugala. So change of lineage begins with MG, Magga, path consciousness. And then immediately after Magga, two pala moments, two fruition moments follow. Sometimes there may be three, sometimes two, but let us say just two for our convenience. So this is the thought process. Now, please look at the other chart. The third page, it is in more detail because we need to understand it more in more detail than the other thought processes. So a part thought process contains fruition also. Now, the object of the bhavangas are always karma or sign of karma or sign of destiny, K, KN or GN. You have that this chart, right? This page. Now, the object of M, P, R, U, P, A, N, mind or adverting, preparation, approximation, and adaptation. The object of these four thought moments is miscellaneous formations. It's a technical term. Miscellaneous formations really means the object of vipassana meditation. Vipassana meditation must take the miscellaneous formations or material properties and mundane chetas and chetasikas. When you practice vipassana meditation, you cannot concentrate on nibbana and you cannot concentrate on supramundane consciousness simply because you have not attained it yet. So the object of vipassana belongs to mundane sphere, mundane world. So mundane chaita, mundane chaitasika, and rupa. Rupa is always mundane. There is no supramundane rupa. So they are called here miscellaneous formations. Now, what is the object of G, Gotrabhu, change of lineage? Nibbana. So it is strange here. Gotrabhu here takes nibbana as object, not like in the jhana thought process. In the jhana thought process, it takes the same as the other preceding thought moments. But here, since it is the last before the enlightenment, it takes something like in preparation, it takes the nibbana as its object, this moment of Gotrabhu. And then follows part moment, Magga. And then two fruition moments follow. So these four moments, or these four chaitas, take Nibbana as object. And after that, Bhavanga again. So karma, or sign of karma, or sign of destiny. Now, when we look at this diagram, we see that the three moments preceding G, belong to vipassana. They are vipassana thought moments. That is why their object is miscellaneous formation. That is why I said, without vipassana, there can be no enlightenment. You must practice vipassana before you become enlightened. Now, that is one question. What about some people meeting the Buddha for the first time, and Buddha preached to him or to her just a short sermon, and at the end of the sermon, that person became an enlightened, became a sotapanna or became an arahant. So they had something like instant realization. Although it seemed instant, they must have gone through, or they must have this thought process. They may not be practicing as we do now, but they have these kind of thought moments preceding the moment of enlightenment. That means they must have seen things as they are, as impermanent, as suffering, and as soulless, without seeing the common characteristic of things, there can be no enlightenment. So even though enlightenment seemed to be instant for such people, still there is a kind of vipassana meditation preceding the moment of enlightenment. We may not call it meditation because they may not be meditating, but these thought moments arise, taking the miscellaneous formations as objects and seeing them as impermanent and so on. And then G, Gotrabhu, and as I said, Gotrabhu does not take the miscellaneous formations but Nibbana as object. And from this moment on, a person becomes an Ariya, A-R-I-Y-A. Ariya means noble person. So, beginning with Magga moment, beginning with Path moment, a person becomes an Ariya, a noble person. Have you heard of there being eight noble persons, eight kinds of noble persons? It is said that there are eight kinds of noble persons. The person at the moment of first Magga, and then the person at the moment of first Phala and so on, before second Phala. And then the person at the moment of second Phala, that is third. And then after that until not including the third moment, third stage. And then the person at the third path, and then later. And then at the fourth path, and later. So there are said to be four kinds of noble persons. But in practice, we can have only four. I mean, there are eight kinds of noble persons, but in fact, there are only four kinds of noble persons. Because what we call a person at the Magga moment, at the path moment, lasts for only one moment. Although theoretically we say there are eight persons, in practice we can get only four persons. It may not please some people, because why he is called a person at that moment only, at that one moment, and after that he has another name, or he has changed into another type of person. At this moment he is called a Magga person, and then after that he is called a Phala person. I think the analogy is something like a person who breaks a record. So at the moment of breaking record, he is breaking the record. So he is a breaker of the record. But after that moment, he has broken the record. So something like that. So there are eight types of noble persons, and they are called four pairs. Now, what is the moment of enlightenment? Magga moment is the moment of enlightenment. Then what is enlightenment, or what does enlightenment constitute? We have to see two things here. Magga takes Nibbana as object. That is one thing. And at the moment of Magga, there is the destruction of defilements. So these two things constitute enlightenment. At the moment of enlightenment, a person must see Nibbana. A person must realize, a person must see face to face, so to say, Nibbana. And he must eradicate defilements at that moment. So if a person says he has gained enlightenment, or he is an enlightened person, then he must have destroyed some of the defilements. And destruction of defilements here means total destruction. Total destruction means the defilements destroyed at that moment will not come to him again, will not arise in him again. So, enlightenment means seeing Nibbana and destruction of or eradication of defilements. After the path has destroyed the defilements, there are two moments of fruition, phala moments. And their function is further tranquilization of defilements. That means you first put the fire out, and then you pour some pots of water on it so that it cannot burn again, something like that. So, or maybe somebody strikes a person, and then you hold him down or something like that so that he cannot get up. So the function of the fruition moment is called further tranquilization of defilements. You may find this expression in suttas or in the Visuddhimagga. And then Bhavanga follows. So we can learn many things from here. Now, Buddha's teaching or Dhamma is said to be in Pali akalika. There are six attributes of Dhamma, and one of them is akalika. A K A L I K A, and it is translated as timeless or something. But it is not timeless. It does not mean timeless. Also, although akalika means no time, but here no time means it doesn't need any intervening time to give results. That means it gives immediate result. So magga is the cause and phala is the result. Here the result immediately follows the cause. Nothing intervenes between magga and phala. And I want you to understand this, because there are some people who say that there may not be phala after magga. That is totally wrong. If we say there can be magga not followed by phala, then we will have to go against many teachings in many teachings in the sutta. We will have to go against many teachers and against the tradition, and we'll have to go against the highest authority, which is the seventh book of Abhidhamma.
So is that sort of refinement? When you say further tranquilization, is that sort of refinement?
That something like, yes. Actually, magga is so powerful that it can kill or it can destroy the defilements altogether. I mean, never to arise again. And phala is just, I don't know what to say, what to call that. Doing something which has already been done by some other person. Like that. Refinement, maybe, yes. Something like refinement. So it keeps the defilements destroyed and not let them rise again. Oh, and then destruction of defilements. This is also important. Now, you may read detail in Visuddhimagga. Destruction of defilements, or destroying the defilements, really means destroying their potential to arise again. Not the defilements themselves. Because if there are defilements, there can be no magga, no no path consciousness at all, because path consciousness is kusala and defilements are akusala. And kusala and akusala can never arise at the same moment. So, what the path consciousness eradicates or destroys is not the defilements, but their potential to arise in the future. It is like treating a tree with some chemicals so that it cannot bear fruit in the future. The trees are already the fruits are already on the tree, and so you cannot do anything about them. But in order that this tree may not give any fruits in the future, now you may treat it with some chemical or something, and so it becomes what you call bare. Now, in the same way, eradication of defilements really means not letting them arise again, arise in the future. So their potential is what is destroyed by the path consciousness. That's a very interesting and also difficult to understand discussion about this in the Visuddhimagga. Something like, it is the present defilements that path eradicates, or past defilements or future defilements. And if none of them, then what's the use of the path consciousness at all, or something like that. So the point they are to understand is what path destroys is not the defilements themselves, but the potential, their potential to arise in the future. So this is for the first magga. Then, after reaching the first magga, you want to reach second magga and so on, second path and so on. So when you reach the second, third, and fourth stages or fourth paths, there will be the same thought process, but with one difference, one small difference. You see the difference there in the diagram? First path and second path, etc. Between first path and second path, etc. Do you see the difference? Yes. Instead of G, there is VD, right? So instead of Gotrabhu, there is VD is Vodana, in Pali, Vodana. So the translation was purification. Now, after you reach the first stage, your lineage has already changed. So there can be no change of lineage again. You have become an Arya. So the lineage is has already changed. So when you reach the second stage, there is no change of lineage. So instead of change of lineage, there is purification, maybe further purification or something like that. Because at the second stage, you eradicate some, or you lessen, you make less some more defilements. And then when you reach the third stage, you eradicate some more. And when you reach the fourth stage, then all the remaining defilements are destroyed or eradicated. So for the second, third, and fourth path, thought processes, we have purification or vodana instead of Gotrabhu. This is the first attainment of path. First attainment of first path, second path, third path, and fourth path. Now later on, after reaching the first path, after becoming a sotapanna, a stream entrant, then you will want to have the phala movements arise in you again and again, because phala movements take nibbana as object, and nibbana is the highest peace. And so when your mind takes the highest peace as object, you are peaceful, or you are happy or something. So you may want to have this consciousness arise again and again, like entering into the attainment of jhana. So here it is attainment of fruition. So in order to get that into that attainment, or in order to have the fruition moments arise in you again and again, you practice vipassana again. Not long, but you have to, because the vipassana or karma vajra moments must precede the fruition moment. So in this case, first there is vibrating bhavanga, and then arrested bhavanga, and then mind or adverting, and then four ends, four ANs, four adaptations. Here the four are collectively called by the one name, adaptation. They are actually they are represented by one of the eight karma vajra kusalas or kriyas. Yes, yeah, that's right. So they are javanas, and so they repeat themselves. So four moments of karma vajra actually accompanied by knowledge or wisdom. So four moments of them, and then the four are collectively called by the one name, adaptation. They are actually represented by one of the eight karma vajra kusalas or kriyas. Yes, yeah, that's right. So they are javanas, and so they repeat themselves. So four moments of karma vajra actually accompanied by knowledge or wisdom. So four moments of them, and then no magga, just phala, and then countless moments of phala will follow. In this case too, before entering into this attainment, and he has to make a wish or say intention like, may I be in this state of fruition for 1 hour, 2 hours, or 1 day, 2 days, and so on. So only phala thought moments arise in him, one after the other without interruption, until the end of the intended time. So this is the attainment of fruition. When a person becomes enlightened, then he must be able to enter into this attainment of fruition. And here in this thought process, there is no magga, there is no path consciousness, only the fruition consciousness. Path consciousness can arise only once in one person. I mean, the same path consciousness. So first path consciousness can arise in a person only once. It will not arise again in that person. So here only phala moments arise, and millions of thought moments, phala thought moments. Then next, the next is the mind or thought process of cessation. Cessation means cessation of mental activities. Now, it occurs when a non-returner or an arahant, and of course a Buddha or a Pachika Buddha, enters into cessation or temporary suspension of mental activities to experience the bliss of peace. Now, this cessation attainment is a very refined one, and so it can be entered into only by the two highest noble persons, the non-returner and arahant. And they must have all the nine jhanas in order to enter into this attainment. If they are dry vipassana non-returners and arahants. That means if they do not have jhanas, then even these two persons cannot go into this type of cessation attainment. It is like the sustained attainment of fruition, but the difference is in the sustained attainment of fruition, there still is mental activity going on, or there still is the arising of chetas. But in this attainment, no chetas will arise. So that is the difference. And in order to enter into this attainment, the non-returner or an arahant must have got all the nine jhanas, because before reaching this cessation attainment, he must first enter into first jhana and then emerge from the first jhana and practice vipassana on that jhana. So when we say jhana, we mean the cetta and cetasikas also. So he must practice vipassana on these jhana, cetta and cetasikas. And then he enters into second jhana, then emerge from it and practice vipassana on the second jhana, and then third jhana, and then fourth jhana, and then fifth jhana, and then the first of the Arupa Vajra jhana, the second of the Arupa Vajra jhana, and then practice vipassana on that, and then enter into third jhana, third Arupa Vajra, formless jhana. Now, after the third formless jhana, he does not practice vipassana, but he makes some preparation to enter into the cessation attainment. And then he enters into the fourth Arupa Vajra jhana. And after 2 moments of fourth Arupa Vajra jhana, neither perception nor non-perception, the mental activity ceases altogether. So there is blank here, nothing here. And at the end of the appointed time, at intended time, then if he is a non-returner, then the non-returner's fruition consciousness must arise. If he is an arahant, arahant's fruition consciousness arises once and then lapses into bhavanga again. Now, it is said in the books that a person can enter into this cessation attainment or any jhana and phala attainment for 7 days at most, because it was believed that food once eaten can sustain the body for only 7 days. So if you don't eat for 7 days, then you will die, something like that. So food once eaten can keep the body alive for 7 days. So the duration of the cessation attainment for human beings is 7 days. Now that's an interesting thing. So a person must review his life before he enters into this kind of cessation attainment, whether he's going to live more than 7 days or not. So if he's going to die 2 days later and he intended to be there for 7 days, then there would be a clash. A clash of his intention to be for 7 days, and then his life is going to end in 3 days or something like that. Actually, if he knows that he is not going to live 7 days, then he must not enter into it for 7 days. A person cannot die during during the attainment of even during the attainment of fruition and also attainment of cessation. So when they are in this attainment, they cannot be killed, they cannot be wounded. Even their personal belongings cannot be damaged by fire or by whatever. And that also they make a wish or determine before they enter into this cessation. So may my personal belongings be not destroyed by fire, water, or be bitten by rats and so on. And there is a story of a group of ladies going into a place in a forest, and I think they were cold, and so they made some fire on, and they did not know that there was an arahant in the cessation attainment. So they put wood on that person and then set fire to the wood, and they warmed themselves. So they did not know. But later on, they knew that the monk was there, but since the monk was in the cessation attainment, no harm could be done to him. But they thought that they had caused harm. And so in order to cover up their doing, they put more wood and logs on the monk and then set fire and went away. So in the present life, that means during the Buddha's time, they died of being burned as the result of that akusala. No, he didn't die. The people also in that life they didn't die of burning, but they may have gone through many lives, and during the time of the Gautama Buddha, they were born as a human beings, and then they came together, and one of them became the queen of a king, and then you know kings have many queens, and then one queen was jealous of the other queen, and so. She set fire to the house they were living in, and they all died.
This was
but it only came after the choir came, it only came after when they knew something.
That's right, yeah.
Not when they knew something.
Right, yes. If they went away without knowing about that, then there would be no akusala. The first was innocent. The first action was, but the later action was what do you call it? Akusala, bad action.
Why
would someone want to achieve? Yeah, there's an answer. Arahants and Buddhas, even the Aryas, look at life as suffering. You know, so. The aggregates themselves are like burdens for them. There's a sutta in the Samyutta Nikaya called burden. So it is a great burden for them to carry this burden of five aggregates. So in order to get rid of as much of that burden as possible while they are living, they try to stop mental activities altogether. In fact, yeah, that's right. It is a vacation for arahants, vacation from dukkha. That's right. So for and they feel better or more peaceful than they were in ordinary fruition attainment, because in ordinary fruition attainment there is still cheta arising and disappearing, one moment of kala after another. So that means there is still dukkha. But in this cessation, there still is dukkha, but much less, because no dukkha of cheta and jitisika, because they are non-existent at that time. At that time, they are like statues. Yeah. They have no mind at that time. They don't know what's happening to them or to other people. It is like real vacation. A gap in the flow of consciousness.
You have so much awareness.
You said earlier that I'm a little bit confused about the person must not enter this and know they're going to die in 3 days. But if they're in the state, then they cannot die. So what could go wrong if they cannot die if they're supposed to die in 3 days?
That is why it is said that if you know that you are not going to live for 7 days, then do not enter into this cessation for 7 days. I don't know. Since they are arahants and non-returners, I think they know they're going to die in 3 days or 4 days.
But then why, if they know that, then why wouldn't they know not to enter this state? Why does it have to be written down?
I don't know what will happen, because a person cannot die during the cessation attainment. But his life faculty, we call it life faculty, his life faculty will not last until the end of 7 days. So there will be some clash there. I don't know actually what will happen if somebody did enter into the cessation knowing that he was not going to live 7 days. I don't know what will happen. But the book said they should not enter into the attainment if they knew that they are not going to live 7 days. Yes. Those who have become noble persons have understood thoroughly the nature of aggregates. And in one of the suttas, Buddha said, whatever is impermanent is suffering. Whatever is impermanent is suffering. So, whatever has a beginning and an end is impermanent. So according to that definition, everything in the world is suffering. I mean, everything in living beings. So it is suffering. Although we may be enjoying life in the normal sense, yet that itself is suffering according to that definition, because the enjoyment has also the beginning and an end, and so it is impermanent. And if it is impermanent, it is suffering or it is unsatisfactory. Now, they have seen the true nature of mind and body, say, always appearing and disappearing, arising and disappearing. And so they see this as a burden, as suffering. So in order to get away from this suffering, as much as they can, so they want to stop the activities of mind or mental activities, so that they get some respite from this ever going suffering or ever going process of becoming and disappearing. That is not called attachment or craving. because there is nothing to crave for. And this kind of peacefulness is not the object of craving. It is beyond the range of clinging or craving, the bliss of Nibbana and the bliss of the cessation.
I understood how you got from the sense sphere to jhana through concentrating on like a mental image instead of an act of physical object. But and then you're in the second part you're sustained in your jhana. But how does it change? What causes it to change the path? I mean, why one moment is it a jhana, the next moment,
the path. Yeah. It is your wish or desire. When you want to get jhana, you practice one kind of meditation. But when you want to get path, I mean the enlightenment, then you practice another kind of meditation. So the path going to them is different. I mean, the way going for them is different.
Does that relate to the 30 objects and the 10 objects?
Yeah, 30 objects lead to the attainment of jhana, but not to the attainment of path.
And that, oh, I see, okay.
Okay, let's go to one more. And it's most difficult and interesting, the death and relinking thought process. I have two hours of tape, so.
Can attention to the breath be an object for jhana?
Breath, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Breath can be, yeah.
It's not necessarily this.
No. That is just for an example, because it is easier to tell about than disc. You can take breath as an object and get jhana. Yeah, yes.
Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, but...
I mean, trying to work.
You can practice samatha or vipassana on breath,
right.
Depending on how you practice it.
Right.
So, if you want to get jhana and you want to develop samatha or concentration, then you keep on the breath only. And you do not pay attention to other objects or other distractions. You keep on the breath only. But if you want to practice vipassana on the breath, then you keep on the breath and you pay attention to other objects also when they become prominent at the present moment. So that is the difference. So, death relinking thought process. So this the last one, right? And the one that I handed out today, or both are handed out today, because the one that is stapled has something missing. So please look at this chart. Now this thought process arises at the time of death. So when a person is about to die, that means very close to death, or even at the moment of death, this thought process arises. Now, when a person is about to die, then the karma or sign of karma or sign of destiny, one of these three presents itself to his mind. Sometimes karma, he will remember karma. Sometimes he will remember sign of karma, or he will remember, or he will see in his mind's eye a sign of destiny. So one of these three presents itself to his mind, to the mind of a person who is going to die. So for our convenience, we take only one of the many varieties of death and relinking thought process. This particular thought process is chosen because I want to show you how the death consciousness and relinking consciousness have the same object, although one belongs to one life and the other belongs to the other life. Now, please remember that the lifespan of a present visible object is 17 thought moments. So, suppose a man is going to die, and in his mind, he has some present visible object. He sees through his eyes. Now, that can only be a sign of karma. Therefore, KN is given there. Present visible object KN. Because it is said that if it is sign of destiny, it must be taken through mind door and not through eye door. But here, I want to show you mind door. I mean, eye door. So it cannot be sign of destiny. So it is sign of karma. That is anything that was instrumental in the performance of the karma. That is, when the karma is dana, then things given, and those who accept the dana, they are signs of karma. If it is a killing, then guns and arrows and bows and the being killed are a sign of karma. So suppose a person sees a sudden sign of karma at his death. Since it is the present visible object, it must last for 17 thought moments. So first it strikes at the eye door, and then one moment passed, and then two vibrating moments follow, and then what next? P, that is five sense door adverting, because we have come back to sense door or eye door thought process, and then CK is seeing consciousness, and then receiving, investigating, determining, and then five moments of javana. At the time of death, it is so weak that javanas cannot repeat seven times. So only five moments of javanas. And let us say, after javana, death arises, death consciousness arises. Immediately after death, there is PT, patisandhi, relinking. That is conception, relinking consciousness. And 16 moments of bhavangas follow the relinking consciousness. Mind or advent, and then 7 moments of javana, and then bhavanga again. Now, in life one, the object of patisandhi, linking, bhavanga, and death are the same. So in life one, relinking PT, bhavangas are all K, and the CU mean Chuti, the gas are also KN, and if it is GN, the GN. Now, I think last week you asked about this. There would be only one object for relinking and Chuti is all through the samsara. But that cannot be, because now if you look at here, in life one, the bhavanga, dead consciousness, has the same object, same identical object. That is correct. But now you see, the relinking consciousness in life two takes present visible. It's very strange. Now, From PT, life two, number two life begins. Although number two life begins, the object in the immediate past life is still existing. how many moments? 3 moments left. Therefore, the relinking consciousness, PT, takes the present visible object as object. And so the bhavangas and also the dead consciousness in life too must take the present visible object as object. But after the BH2, or with the BH2, 17 thought moments are completed. So the present visible object disappears, and they become past. I mean, it becomes past, beginning with BH3. So, please look at here. Now, this is present visible object, right? And it is the object of this thought process. And this becomes past from here. From here. Actually, this and this are the same object. This is present, and then this is past. So past visible object. And this past visible object will be the object of bhavanga all through life too, and also the death consciousness in life too. So there can be no identical object of relinking bhavanga and judi for many lives. So the object of relinking bhavanga and judi of one life is different from that of the other lives. They cannot be identical, because you can see the difference here. So in life one, the object is this. But in life too, the object is this. So it is different object in each life. So there can be no one identical object all through the samsara. In this life, it may be, let us say, karma. But in next life, it may be sign of karma or a sign of destiny. So they are always different from one life to another. Now, the other thing to understand here is about patisandhi, relinking. Many people misunderstand that relinking is the result of death. Or sometimes they say death in this life conditions patisandhi in next life. Now, the word condition it means many things. Now, relinking is caused by karma. Karma in the past life or past lives. So, relinking is not caused by death. So, relinking is not the result of death. If death conditions relinking at all, it conditions by giving place to relinking consciousness. Say, you are sitting on this chair. In order that other people may sit on this chair, you disappear so that the other people can take your place. In that way, we can say that death consciousness conditions, but this relinking consciousness. Not in other way. Not that death consciousness is the cause or the producer of relinking consciousness. Because the producer of relinking consciousness is karma. So according to his karma in the past, good or bad, which gets chance to give result, then his patisandhi, his relinking consciousness will be good or bad. So the quality of relinking consciousness, it's being the result of kusala or akusala depends on the karma, kusala karma or akusala karma in the past. It is not caused by death consciousness, although it immediately follows death consciousness. So in Theravada Abhidhamma, it is taught that there is nothing intervening between death and relinking, death here and rebirth somewhere. It may be thousands of miles away, but there may be intervening distance, but in point of time there is no intervening anything. Immediately after this moment, there is next moment. So immediately after death, there is relinking consciousness. It may be millions of miles away. Yes.
This sounds, well, there's two questions I have. One is that it sounds very much like I die here and I'm born immediately in another body.
Yes.
And so there's two questions about that. One is sort of an image that the Tibetans have about people sometimes getting lost and wandering through the Bardo streets.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And the second is, if it's so immediate from this body to the next body, then how do there get to be more people? I mean, if there's 10 souls on the planet or 10
uh-huh.
beings on the planet, and then those 10 die, uh-huh. and then there are 10 more born. How what happens when there gets to be 20 people? How does the consciousness enter the 20 people?
Okay, the first one is even in our country, the predominantly Theravada Buddhist country, people still have some belief that say after a death, the ghost or some the spirit stays for 7 days before going to next existence, and that is rejected in Kathavattu, and that is not accepted in Theravada Abhidhamma. But I think in Abhidhamma Kosha,
I think there is.
It is taught there. It is called Antarabhava. That means in between the existence in between two existences. But according to Theravada teachings, that interim existence is a separate existence. Suppose a person dies here and he becomes a ghost, and then he is reborn in another existence. Now that period is his one life. So there are three lives according to the Theravada explanation. That is why Theravada does not accept the interim period between this one life and the next life. So when you become a ghost, then that ghost is one life, and then you take rebirth in as a human being or whatever. Then that is another life. So something like that.
You just have a subtle body instead of a gross body.
Yes. When you are a ghost, you have a subtle body. And what's the second question?
How do there get to be more people?
Oh, yeah. I don't really know, but, you know, we cannot look at human beings only. Because any being can be reborn as any being, according to the Buddha's teachings. So there are many insects, and they may be reborn as human beings, and human beings may be reborn as insects, and so on.
Other planets.
Pardon?
Other planets.
Yes, there are beings on other planets, too.
I had a professor of Buddhism explain, he said, remember all those buffaloes that we killed in American West? And he said, and just think how many fleas those buffaloes had.
That's right, yeah. It is difficult. But it is not impossible. Because being an animal, then what that being will do is more akusala than kusala. But, you know, beings have this two of kusala and akusala. We have gone through a long time in this samsara. And so we have done many good karma and bad karma in the past. And they are waiting for their chance to give results. Yeah. It is not a joke. So, when the circumstances are favorable for, say, kusala karma to give results, then it gives results. And when akusala karma gets chance, then it gives results. So, since that kind of karma is always there, and when it gets chance, then an animal can be reborn as a human being.
So do animals have
chaitya
and
chaitya? Oh yes, yeah. Like we do. Yes.
But not ability to be aware.
They have ability to be aware of some kind of awareness they have. But
somewhere they're having an Abhidharma class. I mean, that's according to this. I'm not questioning.
But plants don't.
Yeah, according to Abhidharma, plants don't. They have mind and metta. Yeah, like we do, but their standard of mind and matter is lower than that of a human being. They don't have advanced thinking or something like that. But they still have thinking and they still have awareness or consciousness. We cannot say that we carry with them. We carry with us all these things, but we do not know where karma is stored. It is somewhere in our continuity. We'll be talking about karma next week, and so it is like the ability to give fruits in a tree. We do not know where this ability is stored or where fruits are stored in the tree, but when season comes, when it gets moisture and sunshine and all these things, the necessary conditions, then it gives fruit. So in the same way, we have accumulated the kusala and akusala karma, but nobody knows where this kusala akusala karma is stored. But there is this continuity, although there is no permanence. And here also we have to understand these two, so that we do not fall into either of the extremes, the annihilationist view or eternalist view. Buddhism stands between these two, neither accepting any of the two extremes. And it's also important, in Visuddhimagga it is said, with regard to person being reborn. So it is a mere material and immaterial state arising when it has obtained its condition that is spoken of, saying that it comes into the next becoming. It is not a lasting being, not a soul, and it has neither transmigrated from the past becoming, nor yet is it manifested here without cause from that. So Nothing of this life goes to another life, but nothing which is reborn there is not connected, not caused by something here. So, and here let the illustration of this consciousness be such things as an echo, a light, a seal impression, a looking glass image. So you shout into a cave and then the voice came back, comes back. That voice is not your voice, the echo is not your real voice. But without your voice, there would be no echo. And the light of a candle, and then impression of a seal, the same thing. And then your shadow or your image in the looking glass. So for And here, let the illustration of this consciousness be such things as an echo, a light, a sealed impression, a looking glass image, for the fact of its not becoming and not coming here from the previous becoming, and for the fact that it arises owing to causes that are included in the past becomings. Becoming means existences. For just as an echo, a light, a sealed impression, and a shadow have respectively sound, etc., as their cause, and come into being without going elsewhere, so also this consciousness, this relinking consciousness. So we accept this formula, neither he nor another. The person who is reborn here is neither the same identical person nor a totally new person, totally disconnected person. So there are four methods to be applied to the dependent origination to understand it correctly. And two of them are the method of identity and method of diversity. So we have to understand according to these methods too. The non-interruption of the continuity in this way, with ignorance as condition, there are formations, with formations as condition, consciousness, and so on. Just like a seed reaching the stage of a tree through the stage of a shoot, etc., is called the method of identity. There is something, some identity between one moment and another. One who sees this rightly abandons the annihilation view by understanding the unbrokenness of the continuity that occurs through the linking of cause and fruit. And one who sees it wrongly clings to the eternal view, eternity view, by apprehending identity in the non-interruption of the continuity that occurs through the linking of cause and fruit. So we have to see it correctly. If we see it wrongly, then we'll fall into one of the extreme, that eternity view or annihilation view. The defining of the individual characteristic of ignorance, etc., is called the method of diversity. That means each moment is different from the other moment. One moment has one function, and the other moment has the other function, and so on. And so they are, each of them is different from each other of them. So one who sees this rightly abandons the eternity view by seeing the arising of each new state.